I love these action-packed shows where we've got so much going on coast to coast that we're going to try and do a double feature again tonight. Two different guests in a similarly themed program. Two different people who work in the field of economic history, but from two different perspectives. More on that coming up in just a second. And moron being the operative word here, as I describe me and the stupid thing I did to my ankle 6 weeks ago as I tore every ligament in my right ankle. I am now mobile again. I couldn't walk for 6 weeks and all that other trouble I had along the way. Thank you all for your kind words of concern. Thank you too to Gianna for making everything look good below the knee, and for Dean of Summit Orthopedics, who made this very snappy brace for me for my right ankle. He's a coastie. So she, Gianna, is wonderful. And it was a tough time, 6 weeks of getting laid up, but fortunately didn't miss any shows. But now I'm in New York. I'm in the premier radio network studios in New York. I am mobile. They gave me permission to walk, and I was on a plane in like 12 hours. I still have to walk with a cane. I'll be walking with a cane for a while, and it'll be months before they take the pins out. But I take every little blessing as I can. And again, my thoughts are with those people that are struggling with not being ambulatory over long periods of time. That has just got to be tough. It was so nice to have, you know, light at the end of my tunnel. And I hope that you, for whatever it is that you're facing, I hope that you get that too. In fact, light at the end of the tunnel might be an interesting way of looking at the future of this show as we look at the future of our economy. Again, I'll get back to that in just a second. But because we've got so many guests up front, we won't have any time to get to a news segment. But I want to bring a couple of things to your attention. If you go to coasttocoastam.com, cool story about these lights over Utah. And if you scroll down in the news section, you see a story about mysterious clouds off the coast of South Carolina, these hole-punched clouds. If nothing else, these are cool photos and must be seen at coasttocoastam.com. Whether they have anything to do with each other, whether there's anything truly mysterious about them, I don't know, but cool is cool. So's Muscle Beach. You know, usually when you hear the term Muscle Beach, you think about the kind of places where I hang out on the weekend. But if you go to coasttocoastam.com, you'll see an amazing picture of another one of these mass kills. We've seen so many of these lately in all facets, in the air, on the ground, in the water, you know, 300 cows falling over dead in the middle of the night in Wisconsin, or 200 cows, whatever it was, thousands of birds in the air, hundreds of thousands of fish. Now we can add to that hundreds of thousands of mussels, if the contributor is to be believed at coasttocoastam.com. Plus, as long as we're talking about the animal world, have you seen the video that we've linked up at coasttocoastam.com of the gorilla that prefers to walk around on his feet? I mean, just like upright, like a human being. That is his natural state. The video that was captured apparently is fairly representative of how he spends most of his days, just walking around bipedally, unlike the other gorillas who probably look at the guy like, what's his problem? What is he aspiring to be? Like some upwardly mobile gorilla. But go see it. We linked it up at coasttocoastam.com. You see the guy walking across a field. He's going to the bushes. I don't know what he's doing in the bushes, but he is walking with a newspaper under his arm. So you put that together. All I know is I'm jealous because the gorilla is walking better than I am these days. Is our economy toddling along? That's the question. Robert Aliber, who's an author and a professor emeritus at University of Chicago, worked along with Milton Friedman, who's usually kind of a gloomy Gus, says the U.S. economy will grow up to 5%. The stock market will rise up to 15% this year. State financial crises will turn around as more vigorous economic growth benefits state revenue. That comes from toxic debt being laid to rest and the nation's unemployment rate going down. Is that true? Does everybody feel that rosy about our picture? I mean, Andy Gause is a historian of money. He's been watching these trends. You can link up to him through coasttocoastam.com or just hang on for 2 minutes, because he's here to tell you that one of the stories of 2011 just might be some states will go belly up. And what will that mean to the rest of us? And who will benefit from that? Who would be the people who would be coming out ahead? We'll get to that coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. Coming up later in the show on Coast to Coast, we'll talk with Adam Ferguson, who's the author of just an amazing book. It's so incredible to read, called When Money Dies. We'll talk with him on the back half of this show, but we'll get to Andy Gause up front. I was quoting earlier from an article written by Al Lewis in the Dow Jones Newswires. He's the one who said that Robert Aliber, who has been somewhat of a poor prophet on the history, of the problems that we are facing here as a country, both historically and in the future, he said that the American dream is back. He said that the bailouts worked, the Fed's plan to flood the world with money worked, and that our trade deficit with China will shrink. That sounds all very well and good, but that makes me suspicious then. If that becomes the story of the day, what are they not telling us? And Andy Gause is here on Coast to Coast. Good evening, Andy.
Hello, Ian.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, brother.
You can link up to Andy through our website. AndyGause.com is also there for you. And there's all sorts of stuff that Andy's got going on the website. A lot about the Federal Reserve. So how are you feeling these days about 2011? And the prospects, as I quoted earlier, that no states will declare bankruptcy in 2011, or they'll veer away from that precipice. Where are you on that?
Yeah, that's kind of what I concur with. They'll run us right up to the edge and sort of show us how bad it can be, grab us by our collective necks and point us down into the hole. and then, you know, miraculously give us the cure.
Okay, so who's going to do that, the states or the feds?
I think you're going to see a bit of an abnegation of sovereignty by the states in exchange for bailout-type deals.
All right.
So if you look at California, for example, they've been hat in hand to the federal government now for the better part of a year, and certainly they are in need of some drastic help. And I bet they'll get some of it from the federal government, although the Federal Reserve has indicated, forget us buying municipal bonds. So they've apparently ruled out the Obama idea of creating a bunch of money and buying municipal bonds. Since their quantitative easing works so well, let's just spread it to the states as well.
And, all right, well, I want to ask you about, and I know that, you know, you have to remember I have sort of a People magazine level understanding of the economy. So I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And so when you talk about bringing us to the precipice and what a bailout type plan might be, what are we talking about? And do you think and let's use California as an example, because that is the one that is the deepest, is of the 50 states, I think I read recently, only seven are not in financial trouble.
Right.
And that some of them are worse than others, obviously, and California being at the top of that list. So what will it look like then? And what's a bailout type plan? What will happen if we don't give them the money? And what will happen if we do?
Well, let's look at if we don't. As the treasurer of California points out, the state has sovereign taxing authority. So they can tax you right down to your last dollar if they have to. And pay their debts. So it means if they confiscate all of the property of the citizens of the state of California in equal measure and use it to pay off their burgeoning debt. That's an option that the state has. You know, they got a $500 billion pension debt, $500 billion that they owe their public servants. And you have judges already saying, oh, no, once you say you're going to give them a benefit, you can't take it back. It's like a contract. So that's what prompted all this talk about bankruptcy, because with these generous benefit packages for its employees being, you know, guaranteed now because they gave it to them once or promised it to them years ago, this now becomes a contract and they can't go back on it, except through bankruptcy court.
All right, now I'm going to stop it there just to say, can they do what the big three automakers did and say, look, we're going to give you a one time payout for your retirement benefit. We got to get you off of our books, you know, and here's how much we'll give you so that we can take you off of our books in the future. Could they do that with the employees in the pension fund?
They most certainly can. They can offer buyouts. They can offer different benefits. They can offer benefits that would be willingly taken, and just as you could in any contract. But if the other party says no, well, then, you know, the courts have ruled there's no choice. California then has to pay what they promised to pay, unless, of course, the employees or former employees agree to take something different. Now, so as long as the courts are going to enforce these pension obligations, they're going to force a great many states into this sort of a corner where, you know, either bankrupt or tax people out of their property.
Now, I believe the last time we talked, you told me something that stayed with me. And correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I credit you with this in my brain, that a means test was something that might be employed in the near future for Social Security. Right. And so that they're going to start saying, well, you can get the money, but really, before you get any money, here's the new criteria for whether or not you qualify. And that if you already have money, it's just, you know, it's not fair for you to ask for your old money back. And so could they apply? I mean, I have no confidence that I'm ever going to see a penny in Social Security. But I wouldn't mind it if they gave me like a one-time payout, if even just a fraction of whatever I kicked into the system, if they intend on giving me some sort of means test that says I can't have it later on. But anyway, so can they do that with California? Could they give a new means test that say, look, we'll meet these retirement benefits, but only for the people that really need them?
You know, it's interesting about Social Security is the only reason that actuarially it's sound is because there's a realization that it's not a guarantee. That they could cancel the Social Security idea tomorrow with legislation. This, of course, is different from a negotiation with a private union. And so while one is a contract, the other is not. And this, of course, has been pointed out at great pains by the people at Social Security, because if you ask them to look at their outlying years, well, suddenly the whole United States is bankrupt because we can't afford it. So because Social Security is viewed as an insurance plan and not a guarantee, it's not an entitlement. You believe that? I know. The rest of us find that a shock as well, I'm sure. But because it's not, then they can ignore any requirement to fully fund Social Security. But as far as a pension is concerned, that is an entirely different arrangement according to courts, and it cannot be changed because it's a contract.
Okay. So good to know. But then that's the separation again. Back to the case of California, they have it within their rights, and they're, you know, I could see where they could really scare the snot out of people to say, you either pay up or we'll come and get it from you, and we just need what we need and we'll take it if we have to. That this is a distinct possibility in for the future of Californians.
Oh yes, indeed. You know, we already have court cases moving forward this month where individual municipalities are trying to change the way that they have to pay or lay off their employees. And the courts are just constantly pounding at the municipalities and throwing out case after case. So the nation is watching to see how the courts rule on, you know, the cities, various cities in California decision to lay off employees or not pay benefits and so forth. And in fact, the Vallejo just declared bankruptcy. It emerged from it, however you want to call it. This has to bleed through to the state level. So as more and more municipalities face this difficulty, pretty soon the state will have to face it as well.
Okay. Fascinating. Thank you. And yet we're just getting started with Andy Gause. You can link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. And that was, I sort of stopped you early and to sort of drill down a little bit on what you were saying about that type of a bailout. What other type of bailout could they be talking about? If California says, we're going to go under, where else could they be getting the money? And how else, let me ask you another way. Where else could they point the gun and say, give us the money? Where else could they They'll be, who else could they be shaking down other than their own state residents?
You know, the rest of us. You look at history and you'll see cases at the founding of the Republic, during the Civil War, where all of the debts of the states were assumed by the United States. So, okay, California, you've been terrible and you've spent yourself into oblivion, but North Dakota, you've been very thrifty and you've saved a bunch of money. So in a perverse sort of a means test, why don't North Dakota pay off some of California's debt? Mm. That's the ultimate bailout program, where we all get band together as one and we take all of the collective debt and we throw it into a pile and we assume it at the federal level. That certainly is a plan that's not outside of the realm of possibility. And but along with it would go various abnegation of sovereignty. I mean, where a state says, okay, we're going to give up our right to make our own determinations within our border if you'll take over all of these obligations for us, and now you'll have the federal government looming large over every state that found itself in this crisis.
It kind of the equivalent of how when the feds bailed out, say, an automaker, they came in and they said, here's the kind of flights you can take, here's how much money you can make. Right, okay. Yeah.
Here's six guys for your board, and now you don't make your decisions anymore, we'll make them for you.
Until you can buy it back. Well, until you pay off that debt. Okay, so in a way, it's kind of like you're borrowing money from your parents. I mean, in a way, like you come to your dad, come to mom and dad. Suddenly, mom and dad, if you say, "Hey, we're going out to dinner tonight," they say, "Well, have a good time." But if you're borrowing money from them to keep the house afloat, and you say, "Hey, we're going out to dinner tonight," suddenly they have a right to say, "Oh, really? Where are you going? And how much are you spending?" Right, exactly. So,
And that's the type of supervision that these states can count on in the event of this sort of a bankruptcy bailout. Look at Greece's situation. Remember, the EU, the European Union, is really just a collection of states that got together, gave up their right to print money to a central authority, and then now as they find themselves in trouble, they have to go back to that central authority hat in hand and say, okay, we'll put in these austerity measures if you'll bail us out.
Right.
This, of course, is not the ideal situation, but certainly one of the most probable bailout scenarios.
Who else, we're kind of picking on California there, who else would you say is at the top of the list with a handout in 2011, as you see it, Andy Gause?
Number one with a bullet, the little Rhode Island state. You know, that little state of Rhode Island.
Yeah, right.
Is just buried, like a 20% debt to GDP ratio. So
really?
They're number one on my list.
Okay. That surprises me in a way, Rhode Island, because I would think, what are they doing? What have they promised their citizens? What have they got in terms of this debt that makes them so susceptible?
Well, it's the same story throughout the states. Unfunded pension liabilities.
Okay.
They promise these state workers that they're going to give them this pile of money when they retire, and then they don't put any money aside. And, you know, companies can't get away with that, but states and other government agencies have been allowed to do exactly that. So between health care and unfunded pension liabilities, you know, you double the state's debt. And again, at 20% of their GDP, they are in the worst condition of all 50 states.
Okay, so we'll get to more of those two coming up, and we'll find out where your state ranks in here, too, in a way. But so unfunded pension liabilities, or as it would be in the private sector, a Ponzi scheme, right?
Yes, exactly.
The people coming in are the ones that pay the people who are longest in. They're the ones that get their money.
Yeah, they never put their money aside. Precisely correct.
Okay, so we'll get to more of this. And again, you can get to Andy Gause's website by clicking on to coasttocoastam.com and picking it up from there. I'm curious about a couple of things, though. When it comes to, say, some of the good news that we're hearing about the economy lately, about the employees that may be hired in 2011, the possibility of, say, shrinking our trade deficit with China. I want you to address, if you can, where you see it and where you think there might be a little smoke and mirrors going on with the economy. Where is it valid? Where is it not valid in these projections for growth for 2011? We'll get to all that coming up next. We'll get to your calls, too, a little bit later on for Andy Gause. And then later on tonight, When Money Dies, there is a cautionary tale from history on the way on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. We're talking the economy tonight, but we're looking at what other people may not be willing to talk about. That is to say, some of the darker shadows in this suddenly rosy picture. I mean, if the headline for this week is that the economy is getting a makeover, and that we're getting back on our feet again. We're finding our equilibrium, and we're going to get out of this. Oh, well, I'm all for that. I don't want to scare people into thinking it's not going to get better. But I also think that whenever that happens, I get suspicious. And I think, well, okay, what are they not telling us? So what are they not telling us? More of that with Andy Gause next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right, the future of the economy. 2011, Andy Gause, we were talking about states that may go belly up or at least be brought to the brink. And I promised to ask this question earlier. So who will benefit from this? If these states do go right up to the precipice in 2011 of total financial collapse, and they're able to scare the feds into helping them, or they're able to shake down their people enough to be able to get the money to pay off their debts and stay solvent, who will benefit? Who's at the top of that money food pyramid?
There's a 21,000 transaction list that was really recently published by the Federal Reserve that shows the names of the entities that came to the Fed and took loans at very low interest rates, 1-2.5%. Those entities will take that money and come into a state like Arizona and say, buy the state capital, which that's not a joke. Arizona sold its state capital and took the $700 million that these financiers paid for it, and now they're going to pay them rent every year. In Chicago, in Illinois, they're selling municipal garages, airports. In New Jersey, they're talking about selling the turnpike. And so these infrastructure projects that are essentially sunken costs will allow the states to call in a Cintas or another big investor and say, here, you buy our infrastructure and pay us a lump sum of cash now, and then we'll give you the revenue stream from our lottery or, you know, whatever the state has revenue from. You know, much the same as you would call that, it's my money and I want it now. You're
right.
You own a
J.G. Wentworth.
So that's what the states will do. They'll sell off their infrastructure. They'll sell off the things that Americans have historically used for free. In the big cities here in the Northeast, we're seeing waterworks and public utilities of every sort being sold off. And so the proceeds are thrown into the Treasury to paper over the debt problem. And then the investors who bought it, usually at bargain basement prices, reap the benefits of rising rates from now on. So they're the ones that will benefit the most.
That's a very interesting idea. And that there are people that are standing by then with checkbooks ready to say, you know, it kind of, you know, is it wrong for, I mean, part of me thinks that sounds like Old Man Potter and It's a Wonderful Life.
It is exactly Old Man Potter for the 30th time in the United States. We've done it again and again and again. You'd think we'd get it. But the Federal Reserve increased the money supply by my estimation, by 25% since the crisis started. And the injection point for all this money was not send $5,000 to every American. No, it was loan hundreds of millions of dollars to these big investment funds and then let them go out and buy the, quote, distressed assets. So as a result, these entities are fanning out throughout the country, buying real estate, shopping centers and office buildings, even individual houses, out from foreclosed individuals and investors. So they're the ones that will benefit the most. And, of course, the economy as a whole will recover. There's no doubt you can't create, you know, $2, $3 trillion in fresh money and not expect that some of it is going to make its way into the equity markets and the real estate markets. Now, who's going to lose? That's really what's important here.
Well, and I want to get back to who's going to lose, but let me just, since you brought up the point, is it not fair, as I was reading the words of this Dow Jones columnist who was writing about Robert Z. Aliber from University of Chicago, who said, hey, turns out the bailout worked. By putting all that, throwing all that money in the economy, it worked. Did it?
Yes, it did. Just the same way as if you had one pizza pie and all of a sudden 16 guests showed up. And you could cut the slices into smaller pieces and give everyone a slice of pizza. They wouldn't be full, but everyone had a slice of pizza. And that's essentially what's happened here. By making the dollar a little bit smaller, in this case about 25% smaller, they're able to paper over all of the debt problems. So essentially paying off old debt with dollars that are worth substantially less. That's the plan moving forward.
It doesn't help
individual investors. It does help institutional investors, for sure.
Will it help individual investors if the stock market does indeed, say, rise 10 to 15% this year?
Indeed, it will. You know, if you look back last time we spoke, I was not one of the folks that were saying, you know, 5,000 Dow. In fact, it seemed to me that the Dow would rise at least 15%, given all of the money that's being thrown at the problem. If the feds would have taken the position of, look, you guys made this mess, you got to deal with it within the constraints of this quantity of money, we would probably have a 1930s-style depression. If they would have said, oh, well, we're just going to throw money out of airplanes, like Helicopter Ben wanted to do, so we're going to double or triple or quadruple the money supply, well, then you'd get the hyperinflation that we've seen in previous regimes. But a move of just 25%, I believe that's that Goldilocks number. You know, it's enough pain that people are going to feel it for 4 or 5 years, but it was just enough medicine that it kind of put the ship back on an even keel. So I tend to agree with what the assessment of the person from the Wall Street Journal. I would just go further and say that we're going to have a dollar that's worth substantially less in the interim.
That's a really interesting point. By the way, because of what you just said, I'll remind people coming up in the second half of the show, Adam Ferguson's book, When Money Dies, is about what happened in the Weimar Republic in the 1930s. Have you read that book?
I have not, but it's a great study.
Yeah.
Because what you see is that money, when Weimar issued it, was only good in Germany. We have the benefit, every time we print a dollar, 80 cents of it goes outside the country and gets stored in other countries. And not far from what people are telling you, that the rest of the world is dumping American debt, on my website, andygoss.com, I have a chart that links to foreign account bondholders. And you'll see year over year, every single country on the globe except two have increased their holdings of U.S. government debt. In fact, the Brits, who everyone thought were in so much trouble, increased their holdings by 400% in the last year. They went from having $150 billion in U.S. debt to having $600 billion in U.S. debt in a 12-month period. So the rest of the world is embracing dollars like never before.
Okay. And here's how I always look at that. I was thinking, if everybody else is holding dollars, then it will be in their interest to make sure that those dollars are worth something.
Exactly. And we've managed to export our inflation problem, something that Weimar was not able to do. This is why I don't agree with the assessment of hyperinflation, merely rampant inflation.
Well, get into the difference between rampant and hyper coming up later on. When Money Dies, in the second half of the show, we're talking with Andy Gause now, who has got a great website. You really should link it and go to it every day. You can find out more at coasttocoastam.com. So then you were saying, and I stopped you about who's going to, we're talking about who's going to benefit. Companies are going to be able to come in and buy up what are now public assets, buy them at a bargain basement rate that helps pay off the debt of the state, and then turn around and then get rent. So you could have the Garden State Parkway could get sold in New Jersey to a private company who then is now going to start collecting those tolls. You know, I wonder, too, about that, the idea of the pension fund for those. I lived in New Jersey for a period of time, and I remember that there were people that were part of the Garden State Parkway union system, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
But they were getting paid. They got some enormous benefit at the time. Seemed like an absolutely unworkable plan. If they put in their time with the Garden State Parkway, they retired at something like 70% of their final year's pay or something. And so everybody worked all these great overtime hours in the last year to get their final year up way, way high, and so that they got paid, you know, so much more in retirement or something like that. What's going to happen with with those types of companies, those types of entities that have been paying for a retirement plan out of something like a Garden State Parkway system, like the tollway system. If they sell the tollways, who's responsible for those retirement plans?
Well, they'll set up a sinking fund for existing employees, and then they privatize all the rest of the employees. So now suddenly the guy who thought he was going to work and get a pension is now working for a private company, and he gets whatever pension they're going to give him. And his choice is either accept your new job or quit your job, and you'll still get your state benefits when you retire 20 years from now. So okay, they push these guys straight into the corner, and the choice is you either quit your job and keep your state benefits, or you keep your job and go to work for the new private employer who is now going to be responsible for your pension. And this also enables the states to move all of that debt right off their books, which they started really doing in the 70s, but now they'll do it with an even greater flourish because they have all these assets that they can sell.
So a little bit like what happened with the air traffic controllers.
Exactly.
Okay.
Fire them all, hire new ones, and, you know, there goes your problem.
Right.
Unfortunately, yeah.
No, go ahead.
Unfortunately for all of this, you know, we look at the stock market and predict a 15% rise in the stock market. We have to also look at the bond market, specifically the municipal bond market. In the stock market, we see 80% of all common stocks are owned by institutions, not individual investors. But in the municipal bond market, over 70% is owned by individual one-person investors who bought the bond of Joe Blow's state in order to secure their retirement without taking risk, because they're the safest investment in the world, right? Wrong. In fact, those folks are the ones that will suffer the most if this bankruptcy idea is allowed to flourish in the states. They'll essentially bust out their obligations to individual investors who have bought municipal bonds to the tune of several trillion dollars over the last 20 years. And these folks will find themselves with bonds that will be redeemed at pennies on the dollar. And that's where the real losses will occur.
All right. Who else will lose? We've talked about who will come out ahead. Who else is going to be on the losing end of these bailouts or these near bailout type systems coming up?
Well, certainly the taxpayer. I mean, there's just no way to avoid it. You're going to see taxpayers, individual taxpayers in state getting, and especially in the troubled states, getting property tax increases across the board, coupled with a slash of state services. So, you know, just much like the federal budget, where by the time you pay the interest on the debt and the pensions for the retirees, you're talking about 8 or 10 cents on the dollar of tax revenue. So even if you cut the other 8 to 10 cents, which is where you find the meat, you find cuts for education. States, colleges will be raising their tuitions because they're not getting aid from the state, so students will suffer. You'll find food stamp programs, after-school programs, medical programs, clinics, the kind of public service that is done with that 10 cents on the dollar tithing, effectively, that states do. And so that will be the only place left to cut, and that's where the cuts will come. So as sad as it is to say, it will be the most vulnerable in our economy, in our society, that will face the biggest cuts. And I think that given the general feeling of people in America, that they won't take too much of that. After a few of those, they'll say, you know what, you know, let the old people keep their free sandwiches and raise our taxes. And I think that will be the Hegelian dialectic in action, where you have the citizens of the states actually saying, okay, stop cutting and just go ahead and raise our taxes.
All right, very interesting. And so we'll see some improvement, but the question is improvement at what cost? And then it's up to us to be vigilant about what we're willing to accept, what trade-offs we're willing to accept. And if we don't, if we just go, that'll make it better, fine. If we do that, we may not find out for 5 years just the kind of draconian deal we had made. Andy?
This is the time to pay attention to, Ian, no question about it. If folks don't pay attention now, then they really could set themselves up for a mess that will last a lot longer than 5 years.
All right, now I want to ask you about something else, and we'll get to callers for Andy Gause coming up. Maybe not a ton at first, but we'll get to many more coming up next hour. But let me ask you a question. This will sound like I'm veering into politics, which I don't do very often, but it's a sincere question. Barack Obama is now, as part of the, you know, Barack Obama 2.0, hired a Wall Street banker in Bill Daley to be chief of staff, the CEO of GE to be his jobs czar. He's got people from Goldman Sachs back. You know, he's invited some more foxes to come into the hen house, as far as I'm concerned.
They never left.
They never left from Goldman Sachs. What will be the difference between, say, his plan, his approach, and then, say, a Republican, you know, candidate in 2012? It seems to me like this is the Republican playbook he's playing before they even have a chance to get on the field.
Good point. But you know, before Barack 2.0, if you ask the average guy on the street, you know, who's Barack representing, where before he was elected, he was going to be a populist president, right? A man of the people, going to bring a change.
Right.
Then he goes into the White House, and he, by the perception of the average man, bails out all the rich bankers.
Right.
Okay, so now you go down to Wall Street and you say, okay, Barack Obama, he's like with you guys, right? And to a man, they're going to tell you, no way, he's not with us. So he has perceptions to fight. And now that he's thought about getting himself reelected, so now he brings in the heavyweights. So what I'm trying to say is, if you think that Barack Obama was pro-business and pro-banks and pro-bailout before, wait till you see him now. In this next year, ramping up to his election, he's going to embrace big business with both hands at the expense of civil liberties, at the expense of the change that he promised in his election, and at the expense of the average American taxpayer. So I think it's Katie bar the door as far as Mr. Obama running for his next reelection. I don't think he ever stopped running, but now he's going to embrace business with both arms. And those appointments that you mentioned are evidence of just that.
Well, but again, I go back to how will the Republican response differ from, would they say, well, we're not going to have Goldman Sachs people. We're not going to have Wall Street. We'll do it a different way. Well, I don't know. I don't see how, this seems like he just took the same plan that existed and now he's even inflated a little bit more. So but I look at that and I think too, the difference with the, and this is, again, I know I ordinarily don't go down this road and I'm not much of a political pundit, but it seems to me that for the average American, the sting of seeing a Wall Street bailout is much more painful when one loses one's job. If there are bailouts going on Wall Street or bailouts going on to the states, but you got your job back, I don't know how they're going to vote. I don't know that they wouldn't just go, hey, I got my job back. Must be doing something, right?
Exactly. I'm happy I have my job back. I doubt if he's going to see that rapid of a turnaround in the jobless rate. Not that the Federal Reserve wants Americans back to work, which will drive wages higher. So I think you'll see stubborn unemployment through the rest of Mr. Obama's presidency, and that's not going to help him. What he'll be viewed as is the guy you thought was a populist president has now rushed into the arms of the rich bankers, and the only way to save yourself is to vote for the other party. And I think he's playing right into the hands of the Republicans. Although, again, there's not a time's worth of difference between the Republicrats and the Demopublicans. They're all the same, if you ask
me. Well, I can totally get that. But I think this will be one of those times where it may seem like if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, I call that nick of time stuff. That he may get that. He may get that bump in the nick of time when people, it may seem like where we're standing right now that isn't going to actually happen, but it's all it takes is, you know, 2 months before the election. And I think people have fairly short memories on stuff like that.
I wouldn't rule out a second term for Mr. Obama.
At least the way that's going. But all right. So, but that, like I said, I'm not interested in debating that so much. I just had to make that observation because you look at those appointments and you think, gosh, what is the difference between them at this point? So we'll get back to this coming up next hour. We'll give you all the numbers you need. Won't get to many coming up in the first half hour, but many more coming up next hour for Andy Gause. We're talking the economy and the big state bailouts. I want to get back to some of the other states that may be going under And what are some of the other issues for some of these other states in particular? So hang on for that. We'll get to that coming up in the next hour. And also on the way on Coast to Coast, Adam Ferguson next hour. I just want to bring something else to your attention, too. If you happen to live in the Cincinnati area, my friend David Mack, who is a – well, I'll tell you more about that coming up. Sorry. Coast to Coast. It's Ian Punnett.